Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and joining me as always is Steve. How are you doing?
I'm always here, John. Never going away. How are you?
Okay, good, good. Yeah. So I saw that American Express is in late stage talks from unidentified sources who are not authorized to go on the record that they might be buying Cabbage, the small business lender. I think it's all they do. Yeah. Small business loans.
I think they just do that. Yeah. So actually, John, you have a small business. What's your take on Cabbage and the integration with Cabbage and American Express Merchant Services?
Well, American Express really focuses on small businesses. They have like a small business promotion things all the time. They're always working with people and they do have their own loans that they do. I'm not as familiar with Cabbage, but you know, that's sounds very complimentary. Cabbage makes just small business loans, and I'm sure it's a bit very different demographic. So it's probably an all ad for American Express if this deal goes through.
If it gets approved, yeah. I'm wondering whether this will sort of expand Amex's reach into, as you mentioned, some smaller businesses that may not service now. But it also, from a funding perspective, I think that the number that I saw is discordant with the number that I saw Cabbage raise. So they may be selling at a lower valuation that they were valued at before the acquisition.
Well, if they're making loans, maybe all they have to do is just wait and they'll get a lower price. Credit's been very tough for some people, like a lending club. I saw a really interesting, tough for them number that their originations were down 90% from what they were last year. And then OnDeck Capital is just got bought out on the cheap. And SoFi has had some credit problems as well. So It's not easy. I don't know what that implies for the Cabbage multiple. I haven't seen about their credit performance yet.
Yeah, should be fun data in the next few weeks as more information about the deal comes out. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think you'll have some indication of how their credit was doing based on the price. No $36 billion Stripe valuation for sure. Well, the payments guys and the online banks are just killing it. You know, money management is not all about just big businesses. It's also about managing every individual's money well. And we have an expert on that with us this week. We're lucky to have Matthew Reiner, co-founder and CEO of Benjamin at getbenjamin.com. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be on. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Great for you to be here. So first, I love the name, by the way. Benjamin, is that some kind of, I'm going to sound like a really old person. Is that, are you a big rap fan? Is that, laying down the Benjamins?
I mean, you nailed it. You're actually one of the first to nail it. I'm not a big rap fan. Actually, more of a country guy myself, being from the South. But when we were trying to figure out a name, we wanted it to be relatable, given it's a service-based business. And what we do, and which we'll get into in a little bit. And so someone said, you know, it's all about the Benjamins. And we were like, that sounds like it will hit home in this industry, be a personal name, and the Benjamins and money makes a lot of sense. So we kind of stumbled upon it. I wish I had a better story of and rationale behind it, but it was a whiteboard ideation session that led to the name of our business today.
There's years of customer focused research and this popped up. Well, you're in good company, because what, Goldman has Marcus?
There's also Dave, right?
Dave, right.
Yeah.
Dave, there's an Albert before. That was a personal financial management tool as well. I don't know if they're still around, but I know that they were around too. So it's kind of a trend. We're just making a family. Marcus may be the grandpa or the dad, and Benjamin's kind of up and coming as a youngster.
Yeah, Marcus might be the rich uncle if they're coming from Goldman. But well, tell us about Benjamin, who you are and what do you guys do?
Yeah, so Benjamin is an AI assistant for financial advisors. My background is within wealth management. I started out within an RIA here in Atlanta. And then we started another registered investment advisor that was focused on the mass affluent. And kind of running those two businesses, we decided to form, because why not? Financial advisors should start technology companies. We decided to start our own technology company about 5 years ago and solve some of the challenges that we were facing because we were growing at a really good clip. We were trying to serve as many families as possible while maintaining really personalized, deep, meaningful relationships with each of them, while also scaling our current team. And so we set out to try to build a tool that could better integrate our technologies, streamline some of our processes, and ultimately eliminate many of the menial, mundane tasks that that we were finding ourselves and our team members performing day in and day out, repetitive. We said, how can we get everybody on our team to do more or spend more time with the higher value tasks that go along with managing individual families' monies? And so that was the impetus of Benjamin, and that's where it started. And so Benjamin is an AI assistant for financial advisors that's meant to eliminate the menial mundane tasks. And you know, our hypothesis as a firm is that we believe that financial advisors will continue to charge the same, you know, AUM, assets under management fee, and probably at the same level, maybe even more. But the challenge is that advisors are going to be forced by their clients to deliver more value, more services, and more servicing for that same fee, which means that the real challenge in our industry is not fee compression or top of the P&L, but actually margin compression by charging the same fee. And so the way that we felt we could help with that is to eliminate those menial mundane tasks, scale our people, which tends to be kind of the biggest expense on that middle part of the P&L. And so that's what Benjamin does. And he does it by integrating into the technologies an advisor already uses and communicates both internally and externally with clients and team members to eliminate and execute on tasks within the processes of a day-to-day financial advisor.
Oh, so you had a lot of experience doing the financial advising side. So you had some insight. You noticed what these repetitive items were, and you saw an opportunity to automate this kind of thing. So advisors could spend more time on high value things like playing golf with the clients, which thankfully cannot be automated away.
Mm-hmm. It's really, yeah. Some do. Some of the people that we create time for, they spend it on the golf course or with their family. Others find it to kind of grow their business or start a focus on a different line of business. Maybe it's a, you know, mass affluent division or a private, you know, family office division because they have a little bit more time on their hands. You know, the experience that we have in the space in you know, my background of sitting across the table from individual families that were looking to save for retirement, I can relate to a lot of the challenges that advisors face and a lot of the challenges that they have with implementing new technology, gaining adoption, getting clients to be accepting of it, and also the challenges of growing a business. I mean, we ran into that. We plateaued many times before hitting more, you know, higher levels of growth. And a lot of it ran into scalability. And you're seeing that with, you know, profit margins of growing firms and everything of that nature. And I think that we can relate a lot of our experiences over the years of growing our wealth management business to these firms. And it's a little bit of a different perspective, you know, not just a techie coming in and trying to solve an industry's problems. You know, we understand kind of some of the non-sexy areas of the business that are time consuming. And that's a lot of where we try to solve with Benjamin, which is leveraging technology in a unique way for these advisors.
So you're coming from the finance side. Did you end up partnering up to develop the technology, or how did that come about?
Yeah, so you know, my story doesn't continue on into develop and writing code, so I needed help on that side. And we've been fortunate to partner with some really, you know, much smarter than me technology people that help us build the solution. But we started it about 5 years ago, and we really didn't launch it to the public or even internally until about 2 years ago. So it took us some time. You know, I learned a lot on that path of, you know, how to build technology. I was naive heading into it because I just knew how to analyze a financial situation or personal financial situation, analyze stocks, but I didn't know how to build technology. And I learned a lot along that way. But we've been fortunate to have really good mentors and partners and team members to help build that. So we have a team of developers that have built the solution and continue to build it. And then we have really good product people that understand the business and help to ensure that what the clients want is what goes into future iterations of our product.
So what are some of the things that you automate away? What are some of those tasks that you can offload?
Yeah, so we really look at the tasks that we can offload within three main buckets. And a fourth bucket is starting to evolve as well. And so they go within the whole life cycle of a relationship from anything around meetings to onboarding, which is the second bucket, to ultimately proactive maintenance of a relationship. And along that way, there's all these aspects of knowing your client. And from the beginning stages of them being a prospect to the 10-year-old client and trying to better understand them and their family and their needs. And Bench is able to help with all those tasks. And within the meeting bucket, you know, we're able to help with the quarterly, monthly, annual call of getting that scheduled and helping the advisor get prepared for that meeting with any of the reports or insights from their portfolio management system. On the onboarding side, we've shown a high effectiveness of streamlining and speeding up the process of getting the paperwork back and completed and the accounts transferred over for advisors. And then the proactive maintenance, it's all of those ideas, those concepts of how we want to handle a relationship and that we would handle it if we only had one client, but it's hard to do when you're growing your book of business or you have, 50 or 100 clients. And Benji's able to take off all of those tasks, whether it's following up on items from the financial plan to ensure that the client gets it, to helping them answer the questions of what was discussed in the meeting, and ultimately proactively pinging the advisor when they need to talk with the client based on the information on the client profile. And where we are right now, right? We look at our vision in two different verticals. Is the first vertical is how do we aggregate information and integrate information from multiple technologies? So an advisor is using anywhere from 3 to 6 pieces of technology today, and they're not really talking well together. And so how do we better integrate those solutions together? And the funny thing is that the advisors are looking to continue to add more technologies, but not focus on integrating them together. And so first off, what Benjamin does is solve for that. Let's integrate the technologies that an advisor is already using so that they can continue to use those, but at a more effective level. Then the second part of the kind of the initial version of the vision is how do we then take all of the information that we have to have simplistic robotic process automation or RPA, just kind of baseline, AI type of information. If this, then that, and have Benjamin go in and utilize all information from multiple sources. And then the third is natural language processing. How do we utilize Benjamin to have a conversation so he can eliminate these tasks, right? How can he have a conversation with an end client about scheduling a meeting? Or a conversation with the client about their paperwork to help streamline that process. And so that's the first part of the vision where we're really focused in on. And where we're going with all of this is that once we're able to help and make that as efficient and as valuable as humanly possible that we think, then the next stage of our vision is how do we then do next best action and proactive insights based on all of the data from all of our advisor community and advisors specifically about how to best take the next action with your clients based on the information and the workflows and the processes that you have in place today. And so ultimately Benjamin's eliminating tasks today to create time. And then the second stage of the vision is implementing and proactively providing advisors with the next best action to use their newly created time to the most effective and efficient way to not only grow their book of business, but deepen the relationships that they have with their current clients. And that's what Benjamin is doing. So he's creating time by eliminating tasks within those three buckets, and then he's ultimately going to provide the insights necessary to allow them to best streamline their business and grow their business going forward.
That's a pretty awesome vision. Have you been able to actually quantify the effects of Benjamin on the advisors that you've serviced?
Yeah. So what we do is we've actually created an ROI calculator for each individual client that we have, and the ROI calculator looks at their specific book of business. How are they growing? How do they want to grow? And ultimately says, what are their technology spends, their people spends, and shows actually if they were to scale their people, right, ultimately delay hiring, then what does that mean to the bottom line? Ultimately, we know what it means to the people. They're likely doing higher level, higher value tasks that they enjoy more than kind of the menial, repetitive, mundane tasks. And so we're able to show what it means to the bottom line for the owners of the business and the partners of the business. But then ultimately we can go in and say, okay, here are all the tasks that you are doing. And this is the time that it's taking on those tasks. And we're doing it right now based on just asking the team members. And all, as we continue to build up that data set, we'll be able to have a better insight into the real time that it takes to schedule a meeting or follow up on emails or follow through on paperwork, et cetera. But then ultimately what we do is we're able to quantify for each individual firm multiple levers that can be pulled. So if they want to scale their advisors, the number of families that their advisors can manage and the number of families their client service associates can manage, we can say, all right, well, this is the goal. We need to create 600 hours. Here's all the tasks that Benjamin's helping with. And right now, Benjamin's helping with 50% of scheduling, right? Maybe he's only initiating it, but he's not following through on it because you weren't comfortable with that. And so we can say, all right, we can either increase the percentage of what Benjamin is doing of that specific task. And we try to get into the nitty-gritty of the task because ultimately you don't realize some of the kind of repetitive, mundane things that you're doing that are time-consuming because you just know that that's what's meant to be done. And so we're able to show everything that Benjamin's doing and say we can either do more tasks or we can increase the percentage of the tasks that Benjamin's doing for you. And we're able to show what those levers mean to both their time creation and ultimately what it means to their bottom line. And so, you know, with one of our first early adopter clients, we were able to implement Benjamin just within one division, which was onboarding. This firm was growing their book of business at a really fast clip. And they were continuing to have their file folders on the desk of one of their team members of new clients that they were opening up. And things were falling through the cracks, delays, et cetera. And we were able to implement Benjamin just into that process, right? From getting paperwork back to ultimately communicating all the way throughout the process of where the clients stand in the process of onboarding. And we eliminated 50% of the tasks that that one employee was doing. So that employee firstly was said, well, are you going to let me go? And the team said, no, you're actually going to be elevated to higher value tasks. And so we were able to create 50% time there. And then on the other side of the coin, with getting paperwork back from clients, we had another larger client that was repapering families from one custodian to another, doing it all via DocuSign. And by leveraging Benjamin to help continue to ping the clients and follow up with them to get the paperwork back, Benjamin was able to repaper, open the accounts and fund them, help with that process, 90% of their clients within 60 days. And that type of repapering is you well know in the industry, is it takes an extensive long period of time. It's a burden on the team, and it can take anywhere from 90-180 to 210 days or so to get someone repapered. And so that was a really big ROI for that particular client as well.
That's pretty interesting. I'm wondering, in terms of your customer segment, are you going after sort of what size of a business are you mentioned, of course, you want to go after the businesses who are growing, but what sort of business size is your target for this kind of thing? Are you looking for sort of the larger asset managers or just the mom and shop regional RIAs?
Yeah. So we're right now, so we look at this, we break the industry out into three different segments. So you have the RIA world, which is the independents. The barriers to entry for a new technology is lower there because they can make their technology decisions. And then you have the independent broker dealer channels where you have to then work with, the home office, and then you can sell to the individual advisors. And then you have the wirehouses. And right now our focus is, because of our background and what we know, is the registered investment advisor market. And so we believe that the opportunity there is vast. And we understand kind of many of the players in that space. And so we're focused on that side. And, when we came out of the gates with Benjamin, the two initial firms that used him were larger firms. But what we found were the early adopters and the innovators in the industry were some of the smaller shops. So, under 10 employees, et cetera. And so those were a lot of the early adopters. And so we continue to grow within the RIA world and now are focusing in signing up larger clients that have 15 plus employees, 500 million and above. And we continue to plan to expand in the RIA segment while also starting to get introduced into the independent broker dealer channel. So that's going to be our focus for the foreseeable future, are those two verticals. And then as we continue to grow and grow the logos that are using Benjamin, we will take a look into the wirehouses. We think we can add a lot of efficiencies both internally, and also to the advisors that are dealing and working with the individual families.
Interesting. So it sounds like a lot of what you do is focused basically on RPA, maybe some CRM stuff as well, and potentially some sort of digital advisor type of service. What are the moats that you have now to prevent a company like, say, Salesforce from building something that could accomplish most of these tasks, if not all?
Yeah, I think that our moat is continuing to be built, right? And I think our moat is our understanding of the space right now. I do believe that, you know, a lot of the technology that we have built and that we continue to build, yes, of course, a larger firm could do it. And, you know, at Salesforce had some of the, you know, similar workflow automations in them. The challenge is understanding, truly understanding the market. And now that doesn't say that a big firm can do that. I think that, you know, our ability to understand the space, communicate with them, and also focus and have the ability to focus deeply on some of the really menial, smaller item things that are truly impactful to these firms, and our ability to do that because we don't have such a huge following right now, and also our ability to really kind of dig in and build it with these firms at times gives us a moat. And I think as we get into Vision Part 2, that moat continues to get wider. And so, yes, many firms can do pieces of it, but ultimately there is yet to be a company that has integrated all of the core technologies of a core technology stack of an advisor, not just doing single sign-on and showing some of the aspects, but actually deepening the integration with the APIs and pulling in each single data point and turning that control over to the advisor to be able to leverage those data points to execute on processes and workflows and tasks that they have. There hasn't yet been a firm of that way. And I think that along with our industry knowledge, creates the moat that we have now, and also our really focused niche that we have are really three aspects that create the moat for us today. And I think our vision is continuing to build that moat out around there as well.
Yeah, good answer. I think you're the top salesperson at Benjamin. So it sounds like you've gotten a running start. You just started in 2018 and you've been doing well already. How has growth been, and have there been any challenges with growing up as a new fintech?
Yeah, I mean, so we've been really fortunate. I mean, our first 12 months out, you know, we started with, you know, we launched to the public. We launched late 2018 with some beta customers, and we launched to the public in early 2019 to others. And, you know, we went from, you know, four beta customers in early 2019 to we had 52 paying clients at the end of 2019. And so we had some really rampant growth, and we had a small team. There was five of us. And so we learned a lot along that way. Growth has been really, we've been really fortunate on that side. I think that the product resonates, the concept resonates, and especially now in this period of time that we're in, when firms are looking to kind of grow their bottom lines, is they're looking at automation and workflow. They have their core tech stack already involved, right? 90% of firms are already using CRMs, you know, it's 80% of firms using portfolio management systems and financial planning softwares, et cetera. So they have their core, and now they're looking at how do I become more efficient? And it's becoming more and more prevalent in our industry. And so we've been fortunate there. You know, some of the things that I learned, I mean, we learned a ton about the desires and the needs of financial advisor firms, and it's evolved into how we build our product. And what I mean by that is, you know, we came in knowing our own two firms that we built and how we do our processes and the data that we need to do that, et cetera. And that's what we built towards. What we realized is despite all firms doing very similar things, right? From a high level, we all meet with clients, we open accounts, we maintain those accounts, right? There's maintenance that's done on those accounts, we trade them, et cetera. But everybody does it slightly different, and they have slightly different ways that they use their CRM, their portfolio management system. And what we realized was that the flexibility and the scalability of our platform needs to continue to evolve and expand. And that was one of the biggest lessons that we learned, is that the way that we thought people would use the product wasn't necessarily the exact way they did. We had a head start because we had two firms already telling us, and we were able to build a foundation, but we had to really evolve that. And, you know, what we found is that as we continue to grow, we continue to put some stress on our development team, and we were still a small team. And so we actually took the time, you know, over this kind of, you know, this pandemic, to actually pause on sales. We said, we want to make sure and ensure that our product is delivering to the fullest potential to all of our current clients. So we took a pause on sales and we delivered and we spoke with our clients and we developed deeper relationships with our own clients and said, how is this product working? What needs to be evolved? And we let our development team go and launch out a much more robust and innovative version of the platform that we're launching here in a couple of months to all of our clients. And allows for us to not only scale, but takes a lot of the lessons that we learned in the first 15 months, both from an onboarding, which was a huge lesson, right? How do we quickly get clients up and running and seeing the value from the product and that they're able to then and go do it on their own going forward? And then also lessons that we learned from conversations with our clients about what they wanted, how they saw the product evolving with their practice and what we needed to do from a technology standpoint. And it gave us that opportunity to do that pause and reset. And we're now relaunching in a few months with a new version of the product with all those lessons in, with some of the biggest things being pulling in more data than ever before, giving the controls and the reins to what we call as Benjamin's boss within each firm to be able to train Benjamin and test it all within their own ecosystem without having to even communicate or coordinate with a Benjamin team member. And so it's been a lot of lessons from that. Scaling a technology company is different than scaling a wealth management business, but it all does come back to, being human centric, doing the right thing. And that's what some of our core values are that we focus on as a business.
Very interesting. I'm wondering if you can maybe speak to sort of where the industry is now. I know that there's been a lot of movement towards the robo-advisors and other ways to manage your money. Of course, we've seen an explosion in things like Robinhood, but I'm wondering, how do you see the RIA industry going in the next, say, 1 to 5 years?
Yeah, I think in the next 1 year, you're going to see some of those kind of periphery, on the outskirts type of changes, right? You're going to see more digital scheduling, more video conferencing, more e-signature, but not a lot's going to change, I don't think, from the general eye for the industry. We are a slow industry to evolve, right? And you saw that with the robo-advisors, but you just look at history, when Schwab and Vanguard came around in the 70s, E-Trade came around in the 90s. It took 20 years for us to get to that point. And then robo-advisors another, 15 years while other industries were having a lot of these advancements prior. So we are an industry that is really risk averse as an industry. We are an industry that is slow to adopt new innovations and technologies at the risk that it's going to hurt our relationships, which is the crown jewel of our business. And so we're very just kind of, we're slow to adopt. And I think that over the next 5 years, it's going to evolve. And, I believe that the why of why people use financial advisors, right? Robo-advisors are going to be a tool within the toolbox for financial advisors to serve a segment of their clientele or allow them to get into another segment. I don't think that they're going to take over the financial advisory world because financial advice is still very psychological and it's you're talking about someone's life savings. You can't go and do this again, right? When you turn 60 and you save $1 million, you can't go and get that $1 million again necessarily if you retire. And so there's just a lot of psychological, emotional elements of it. And I think that the relationship aspect of this business is extremely important and huge. And so that's why I don't think that robos will take over. And so that's the why I think individuals will use financial advisors, that emotional connection and relationship when it comes to the most precious thing that they've earned over their lifetime, which is their retirement savings. But I think the what and the how we do it will change over the next 5 and 10 years. The financial advisor of the future is going to be different. The what being what we provide, right? Investment management, if you're solely providing investment management, I think you're going to be pushed aside by the robo-advisors. If you're only doing financial planning, I think that there's going to be other financial advisors that are doing more, banking, insurance, planning, lifestyle management, all of those types of things. And technology is going to make it easier. I think that what the family offices do is going to be able to be infiltrated into the masses because of technology innovation. It's going to make it easier for advisors to do that at the same cost. And the how we do it, I think that we're going to be leveraging more and more technology to help us both communicate more personally with our clients, also keeping us more of a finger on the pulse of our book of business. I think that all will change over time. And the question I think that is still posed out there that is so intriguing to me and something that I continue to kind of talk with my peers about, and I don't have the perfect answer to, is why. Why are advisors going to change over the next 5 or 10 years? If markets continue to go up and we continue to have the AUM fee model, and robos have come and they've been here for 10 years and they haven't taken, a ton of the market share of the desired clientele for financial advisors, and financial advisors are making more money now than they were when robos were around, and advisors have heard this at every conference they've gone to for the past 20 years, that they need to change, and they haven't. So why over the next 10 years? And I think that is a really interesting question in this industry. And so far, I think that the why is going to be that margins are going to compress, and that you're going to have a lot of these roll-up firms that are going to make it easier for people to get into this business. The barriers to entry from a regulatory standpoint, et cetera, is going to become lowered, which means more and more people can go, which means that the options and the opportunities are going to spread thinner and thinner, which means that margins are going to become a little bit more pressured, which is going to cause innovation in space. And I think that answer continues to evolve over time. But I think that's the real interesting question here in our industry, is why are we going to change in the next 5 or 10 years, as every white paper and every industry kind of leader is mentioning today?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I remember actually seeing some trade publications a while ago saying basically the RIA industry was done. It wasn't going to survive. All the millennials are going over to the robos. There's going to be the big wealth transfer will take place, and that'll just be the end of it. But it sounds like from what you're saying that there is a niche place for these kind of services, and hopefully you're able to enable this company to service their clients.
Yeah, and I think that the millennial generation is an interesting conversation, right? The generational transfer of wealth has been a conversation in our industry for 20 years. And 20 years ago, everybody was saying, you've got to start planning for it. And you can see that it hasn't really impacted the RIA segment, right? RIAs are adding more assets now. They're growing their business. Now the theme is the average advisor is getting older. But in reality, are they ever going to retire? A traditional financial advisor never needs to retire. They can just use their book of business as a retirement annuity. And as their clients potentially pass on or move clients, then their income kind of tethers off. But that's over 5, 10, 15 years. They've spent 30 years building these relationships. Those people aren't going anywhere. It's like leaving family. And so, I think that this industry, I think that the outsiders that look at this industry find this industry as ripe for disruption. And I think that they're right to an extent, but they're also wrong to an extent. This industry will change. It's going to take a lot longer than other industries. But what you don't understand about this industry is that it's a relationship business. And the relationships are hard to disrupt. And yes, generational transfer of wealth is going to happen. And I believe that advisors need to figure out how to communicate with the next generation. And I think that they have to figure out ways to become digital in that way. But I don't think that they have to do it right away. And if the advisors don't have to do it right away and it's not pressing their bottom line today, they're not going to make that change. And so you have to figure out how you can help them with what's important to them, which is being able to ensure that their relationships are as strong as ever and that they're able to continue to grow their business both from the top and the bottom line. And I think that the generational transfer of wealth is a longer term initiative that, although we help clients plan their business, we don't necessarily do that with our own business, right? Which is kind of counterintuitive at times. And so I think that what is happening inside the industry, at least from an insider standpoint, is not what is being labeled from a headline news standpoint right yet.
Yeah, don't believe all the hype, huh? But maybe you should put artificial reality or VR into your app.
VR is something that we can talk on. I do believe that's going to find its way into our industry relatively soon, and in a prominent way, I believe, as well. I wrote a blog post on this, and I truly believe that virtual reality is a tool that can be really effective for a financial advisor, and not only their relationship, but also their development of their people. So I think virtual reality can play a part in this industry in two ways. And do I think it's going to happen tomorrow? No. But do I think it's going to happen in the next 10 years? I really do believe that it will. And the two ways is one, with regards to bettering the client relationship. Virtual reality is an opportunity for the biggest challenge an advisor has with their clients is helping them see the future, helping them understand how decisions today at 35 are going to impact them at 60. or how a 30-year-old making a decision today is going to impact them a lifetime away, literally a lifetime away, 30 years away, or how a retiree making, or a future, you know, or someone that wants to retire in the next 10 years, making a decision today is going to impact them in 10, 15 years. It's hard to understand the future, right? And what virtual reality can do is take all of those different scenarios of all the different options. It's kind of like a turn to page, you know, read well, those books that we used to read that they turn to page 65 if you think they walk through the door on the left, and turn to page 95 if they go through the door on the right. You can let them actually visualize and live through these experiences and make those financial decisions, whether it's paying off a mortgage or taking a loan out of their 401k, and play through the multitude of different scenarios, a true Monte Carlo analysis that is live and that they can see, not just being told to them or shown on paper that they don't quite understand. They can actually live through it. It's going to make them change the way that they make decisions and that they think about and listen to their advisor and make decisions about their money. I think that that's one way. And then the second aspect is the challenge within this industry is the training that needs to go into new advisors. Because ultimately, your experiences are not in the number of years that you're in the business, but actually the number of kind of tumultuous times that you go through, right? How many tumultuous times have you gone through? Well, I went through, you know, the tech crash, and I went through 08-09, and I've gone through, you know, 11, and I've gone through, you know, the pandemic, right? Like, that's your tenure. And it's hard to teach that. And it's hard to help someone sit across the table of another, you know, a 55-year-old that's looking to retire in 7 years, and you being 23, and being able to walk them through all the different scenarios. And with virtual reality, the training that takes years for many firms to get the number of experiences and meetings can be done in a matter of days by them sitting in front of virtual reality and having communications with multiple different scenarios of families and going through and reacting and helping guide them through that and then analyzing that at the end and then going and doing it again for another 8 hours the next day with 8 different meetings that are all staged through. And that allows training to be a lot more effective, allows them to go through a lot more different scenarios and cycles, answer a lot of different questions, and gets them up and running a lot quicker, which now means that they're, instead of being expenses to the firm, they're actually revenue generators for the firm, which is really, really powerful in the industry. So I as crazy as it may sound, maybe in 10 years, people listen back to this and be like, wow, Matt was seeing something in the future.
Matt does have a book already called Ready to Be Rich, Smart Financial Advice for People on the Way Up. So you're able to sneak that in right before Benjamin or at the same time?
Yeah, so that came right before Benjamin. We had done some technology work for a direct-to-consumer business, and that taught me a lot about you know, the millennial generation, and with us building that kind of mass affluent division, taught me a little bit about how to communicate about saving to the mass affluent, especially the younger millennial mass affluent. And so that, yeah, we were able to get that written just before then, and maybe we'll write another one here in the future.
Do you see anything at RIAs that you like, some common errors that you wish people would pay more attention to?
I mean, I think that the biggest error, maybe two errors that I see, and I don't know if they're errors, I just think that it's just human nature, is we find ourselves getting just stuck in the way that it's been done. And so we just keep doing, as opposed to taking that time to kind of step away and really intimately look at the at what we are doing, why we're doing it, and how we can do it better. And we are creatures of habit, and especially in this industry, if it ain't broke, why fix it? Don't rock the boat. Those are sayings that you hear at all kind of conferences in this industry, and I think that that's something that we can all get better at, because we can all take a step back and look at how to do something better. And the way that we can do it better is, it's going to be uncomfortable in the interim, but it may be better for our clients than what we were doing. And it could maybe open our eyes to a way of doing it much better than we ever thought of. And I think that we just find ourselves getting into that rut in this industry. And just as human nature. And I think the second, you know, aspect of for us and in our firms is that, you know, we have preconceived assumptions of what our clients want. And we always stray away from making decisions because it's not what our clients want. But yet we never ask our clients. We assume what they want. We assume that they didn't want to have video meetings, or that they didn't want to text message with their financial advisor because it's impersonal and it's not white glove service. And what the pandemic showed is, you know what, our clients actually do like it. they like actually being able to just kind of have a cup of coffee and talk to their advisor and not have to get ready and drive and hit through traffic and sit in the conference room. Maybe it doesn't work for every client, but it works for a majority of it. And that can make you more efficient and also expand your reach to potential new clients. And maybe it doesn't work for the first meeting, but it maybe does work for the third, fourth, fifth, sixth meeting. And so the pandemic has taught us that you know, the assumptions that we had may not actually be right. And I think that that's a kind of a common misstep that many financial advisors have, in my opinion.
Yeah, that kind of falls in line with a lot of assumptions falling by the wayside about remote work and in so many different aspects. So yeah, that's interesting. It sounds like you're contributing to solving some of these issues in RIAs and helping people manage money much smarter and better and more efficiently. So keep up the good work. And thanks for being on the podcast.
Well, I really appreciate the conversation and for y'all having me on. So thank you very much.
That's Matthew Reiner, co-founder and CEO of Benjamin. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thanks for listening.